This is the Inch Podcast, a production of InsideCollegeHockey.com. Now, let's send it to our podcast host, Joe Vedashevsky.
This is the Inch Podcast, recorded Tuesday, November 17th, 2009. My name is Joe Gladyszewski, and we'd like to thank and welcome a presenting sponsor of the Inch Podcast for the rest of this year, the 2010 Frozen Four, hosted by the CCHA and Detroit at Ford Field.
Effort, drive, and determination build champions. Be there April 8th and 10th at Ford Field in Detroit, Michigan for the 2010 NCAA Men's Frozen Four, hosted by Central Collegiate Hockey Association and the Detroit Metro Sports Commission. For tickets, call 800-745-3000 or log on to ncaa.com/Frozen Four.
Thanks again to Detroit and the Frozen Four. Looking forward to that event as always, and happy to be in partnership with the Detroit Sports Commission and the CCHA and this year's Frozen Four. As I mentioned, I'm Joe Gladyszewski, Inch Podcast host, ECAC Hockey senior writer. Welcoming tonight, for the first time on the podcast this year, Hockey East senior writer Jeff Howe. Hello, Jeff.
What's up, Gladdy?
How much? How you been?
I can't complain. Not that you want to hear it anyway.
That's right. Also, WCHA senior writer Jess Myers. Hi, Jess.
Hi, guys. Good to be here. I tried to be here once a couple weeks ago and trouble, but I'm back.
Podcast of the year as well. So we'll be getting into Hockey East and WCHA talk momentarily, but also want to welcome in, as always, Inch editor and columnist Mike Eidelbus. Hello, Bus.
Circle gets the square.
That's right. I'll take Don Pardo to block.
Paul Lind.
All right, let's start with
J.P. Morgan.
No, I think that was the Gene Rayburn show. Match game.
Match game.
Yeah, early.
He got blisters on his blank. Sorry.
Keep Magic Johnson out of this.
The Hockey East. The hockey Anyways. Standings were so mixed up. When I looked for the big game of the weekend, it was Merrimack and Blank. Well, it was
this is what they call a deterioration teaser.
Yes.
Merrimack and Lowell this weekend is the big game in Hockey East between two of the surprise teams. Well, Lowell not as much a surprise as Merrimack. Jeff, but is anybody good out there?
I thought you were going to say Merrimack and UConn the way this season's been going. Lowell's a pretty good team so far. I mean, I'm not going to dispute that at all. They're probably the only good team in Hockey East at this point, at least on a national level, if there was a tournament starting today. I don't think I'd feel well about anybody's chances in this league right now except you, Lowell, for the way that they've played both offensively and defensively. I mean, you knew that these guys could go out and they could play defense. They've got some serious stars out there, headlined by Nick Schoes, but they're burying the puck this year at a more frequent rate. So that's really helped them a lot. And, you know, the next crop of teams is really, at this point, 2 through 10. I mean, you look at UMass, you look at the standings right now, UMass is leading with 8 points. If they lose a game this weekend, they could theoretically drop into, you know, like 8th or 9th place. So it's early, and it's jumbled up like Hockey East usually is.
What did Lowell learn at the end of last year, do you think? You know, they went on that run through February and into the Hockey East championship game, just missed out on the NCAA tournament, but do you think that had something to do with their good start so far this year?
Oh, it absolutely has. I've asked guys on the team that already. I mean, I asked them as soon as they lost last year if this was going to help them this year, and they said it would. I mean, more than anything, it's showed them that when they show up to play, and they did more often than not at the end of last year, and stuck to their system and grinded it out and kind of overcame the fact that they weren't as talented as teams like BU and BC and UNH and Vermont, that they could beat anybody because they're so physical. They play such a grinding style. They've got a a lot of hard-nosed kids, kind of like the way that Northeastern was built a year and 2 years ago. And they get good goaltending. They've got a good defensive system. So when they play disciplined, when they stick to what they're supposed to be doing, they're as good as anybody in the league. And they believed that they were a tournament team last year. And they came back a little bitter and a little more hungry because of how last year ended. And they didn't want it to end the same way. And this is, it's always good when you see a team start out like this. You know, you saw it out of Northeastern last year, but it doesn't always happen. When a team ends the previous season with a ton of momentum, they're younger, they're not one of those traditional, you know, hockey's powers or any team in any conference, and then they come out and they actually continue to play the way that they played to end last season. So it's been good to see Lowell at least matching the potential that it showed that it should have at the end of last season.
One stat that I find very telling and very positive for Lowell is they've played 10 games this year and have scored at least 3 in every game. It's not like anyone's gone out and shut them down, you know, held them to 2 or 1 or 0. They've got 3 a game, which that's hard to do in college hockey.
Especially in Hockey East. I mean, I don't know. I think we'll learn more about this league in a couple months. Right now, it doesn't look like they have the goaltending power that they've had in the past, but this is usually a pretty difficult league to score in. Corey Feliti's come out strong, and he was a guy who wasn't as consistent as I think the coaching staff would have liked him to be last year. I think he's got 10 points, 5 goals. Nick Schaus is scoring. I'm not sure if that will actually hold up. It might be a little fluky. I mean, he's a great defensive defenseman. I don't know if he's always going to be the guy that they can lean on to score. That's more Maury Edwards out of the blue line.
Well, but he's got a big shot. Three of his goals are power play goals, and that's that's good. Good sign.
Well, and that's right there. So maybe, I mean, you kind of bring that up, that they have such a good special teams unit on both sides that maybe that goal production will continue then with him, you know, scoring on the special teams. So that's Scott Campbell, who I think is one of the better playmakers in the whole country. And I don't know if it might be too early. It might be a reach to say Hobie consideration. But if Lowell puts together a pretty special season and Campbell headlines that, he's going to be a guy that a lot of people around the country, based on what he did last postseason, they'll know his name.
Yeah, that's a good point. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I don't think it's too early to start thinking in that vein for any of those Lowell guys, especially when you look at the rest of the league. There's just so many question marks, and just when you think you know, you look at these other teams and you think, well, maybe UMass is going to put it together. And, you know, I think as of right now, they're probably the second best team in that league. But you look at, you know, Boston U has been real uneven. BC seems to be getting better as things go on. Northeastern's been up and down, kind of breaking in those new goalies. You know, talked about Merrimack, obviously, has taken advantage. And, you know, another team that's, you know, kind of always kept it close, but now they're starting to put the puck in the net a little bit too. You know, judging from the way the teams have played right now outside Lowell, it's going to be an unbelievable year in Hockey East as far as volatility. I don't think you can go, you know, it's not going to be one of those years where you can pencil in a BC and say, well, they'll be there at the end, or the same with, you know, UNH or BU. You know, it's going to be a real scrap.
Definitely. BU has dug itself in one serious hole by not starting out well, and a lot of that has to do with losing Nick Bonino. I mean, they were going to have to overcome losing Colin Wilson. You know, that was inevitable, but I know that they were counting heavily on having Nick Bonino there centering that first line and, you know, making plays for everybody, putting pucks on the back of the net. BC is a very young team. It looks like it should be a very talented team, but you don't know how much consistency you can get out of a team with that much youth. I think Vermont is a pretty good team. They should get things figured out at some point. I'm still up in the air about UNH right now, and UMass has definitely had a good start. James Marcoux is as talented of a point producer as there is in the league at this point, coming off a 40-plus point season, heading in that direction once again. So there's there's enough there to see the potential out of a few teams having some good years. We just don't know how many of them are going to be able to keep it together, keep it consistent throughout the course of, you know, 6 months.
Between Vermont, BC, and BU, which one of those teams will finish highest in the standings at the end of the year?
You know, based on the start, I think Vermont is a pretty legitimate team. I don't think that they're going to have many down points to this season. BU is obviously the most talented of the teams, and if they get Bonino back and healthy and going the way he should be going, and they get that defense back on track, I mean, I don't know why they're allowing so many goals. They've got to get Milan straightened out. They've got to get this defensive unit. They've got six starting players there who could probably start for, or could be on a top line or one of the top two lines on basically any team in the country, and they're allowing way too many breakdowns right there. I'd have to say right now, it's weird. They're 2-5 in the league, but they're only 3 points out of second, 4 points out of first place. So if you're going to twist my arm, I'd have to go with BU just because of all the talent that's there and the experience that they had from last season.
All right. Let's switch gears here a little bit, Jess. Bring you in, talk a little bit about a situation in the WCHA. Happened over the weekend. Unfortunately, an injury was part of this mix as well, but I kind of want to talk about the rules and the administration of this. For those who aren't familiar with the story, St. Cloud State and North Dakota played a two-game series up at Ralph Engelstad Arena, and in the second period of Friday's game, the first game of the series, Aaron Marvin of the Huskies hit North Dakota's defenseman Che Genaway from behind. Genaway was hurt and did not return for any action over the weekend. And Marvin was penalized, or so we thought, for a five-minute checking from behind major.
He was penalized eventually, I think.
Yeah, eventually. We'll kind of get to that. So Marvin made this hit on Genaway, and the two officials who were working the game put the wrong guy in the box, and that was player's name was Chris Hepp, and this is all according to a report from St. Cloud Times writer Kevin Allenspach, who's definitely on top of things. But Chris Hepp of the Huskies was put in the box. The penalty took place with about 2.5 minutes left in the second period. So Hepp played or sat the 2.5 minutes in the box. Actually, he went to the room and showered and changed.
That's my favorite part of this. Guy sitting with wet hair. Guy sitting with wet hair behind the bench. They're like, oh, wait, you can come back in.
Yeah, Hep was gone. Marvin actually took a shorthanded shift, in that 2.5 minute span. And during the second intermission, the officials reviewed the play on video and correctly determined that it was Marvin. They had the wrong guy. That Marvin should have had the penalty assessed to him instead of Hep. So they made the correction, and Marvin was out. He received supplemental discipline from the WCHA office for the hit, and Hep came back once he got dressed again, put on that wet equipment, and came back and played the third period. I don't know the protocol rules or whatever on from the WCHA office, but to me, that just I don't know if that's a reviewable call the way I see it. I'm all for getting the call right, but there's got to be a statute of limitations, for lack of a better term.
So, by review the call, are you saying, in your opinion, they should have reviewed the hit when it happened to determine who made the hit?
That's not what I'm saying, but
okay. It seems to me, you know, they got the number wrong, obviously. Marvin, I think, wears 18 and Hep wears 17. Knowing officials in general, they would swear up and down right at that moment, oh, yeah, this is who did it. We got the right guy. You know, they're not prone to changing their mind. But in that situation, and especially in that building, I mean, keep in mind, this is at Ralph Engelstad Arena. You've got more video in that building than probably any place in the country. There is an opportunity to review it and get it right on the spot. So from my standpoint, I guess it's disappointing that wasn't done and that you had to do it in this kind of goofy manner.
But when do we get that, you know, when do you get that statute of limitations? Do you only do it on game misconducts or DQs or majors? Or if there's a scramble in the crease and there's four guys who interfered with the goalie, do you have to stop the game and figure out which one it was is going to get 2 minutes for goalie interference? You know,
with four sets of eyes out there, you'd think one or two of them would have seen the number on the back of the jersey.
Yeah.
That's the review process we're used to, is the four guys get together, they talk, who saw what. You know, you see that especially when there's scraps with several guys involved.
Yeah. Well, according to Alan Spock's report, they did bring in a third guy. I mean, this was two officials and an AR, a linesman, who got together and put the wrong guy in.
You know, I happened to be watching that game. This was Friday night's game.
Yeah.
Yep.
And on the broadcast, they didn't show a replay. They never showed a replay of the of that hit. And I was I was flipping back and forth between a few games, but I did happen to see it. And I had the sound down, so I wasn't quite paying attention, but I could see him go back and forth. You know, not only did the officials not catch it, but don't you think Bob Motzko would know, hey, you got the wrong guy? Or
yeah, or doesn't
is it a case of, well, if they're going to take this guy, I'm not going to say it. You know, I'm not putting the blame on him. Obviously, it's not his.
Doesn't the player step up and say, hey, that was me, you got the wrong guy?
I don't know about that.
I don't know. I mean, it's really not, the onus isn't on them to get it right.
They would if it was an assist.
Well, yeah, that's true.
There you go. But if you go and watch the YouTube video, and it's on YouTube, I've watched it a couple times. I mean, it's not like there's a bunch of people around him.
Yeah,
and
it's pretty clear
who did it. It's literally Getaway and Marvin behind the net. And yeah. I mean, there's guys maybe 10 feet away on either side, but it's not like it's real difficult to pick up. It makes me wonder, you know, I think these officials are culpable in this situation because you know, like, and actually I read on Western College Hockey blog, which is an excellent blog, written by Chris Dilks. He said, you know, everybody in the rink knew that Barv did it except for the four officials.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But getting back to your original question, yeah, I don't know. I mean, what's going to happen is this is going to turn into college football and everything is going to be reviewable. And God, we don't want that to happen.
I
want
to know where the line is.
Well, I mean, the reason it was being reviewed in the first place is because they were considering additional penalties.
But you know, that happens on Saturday morning at the league office.
Right. But I mean, what if they don't discover it until then?
That happens all the time.
Yeah.
Guys aren't called for penalties in the game, but then, you know, people review tape and then people get supplemental discipline.
Yeah.
I'm happy they got the call right. I just don't like the...
It sets a bad precedent.
Yeah, and if that provision is in the rule books or bylaws or procedures, you know, Jess, I know you're going to follow up on this this week
we'll find out.
If they were just acting on the fly, you know, I mean, they have video review in their rule, you know, when they go in at the end of the period, can they shuttle through and see what they like, what they didn't like?
Yep.
You know, was there a ref supervisor there who said we should take a look at this? Was it a coach?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if Greg Schiffer
was in say the, when he comes the out building. The, you know, they knock on his dressing room door and say, "We got the wrong." It's like the Hanson brothers in Slapshot. The cops come to the door. we got to take these guys.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of stuff that went on that I was kind of curious about.
No, that's it. It definitely warrants a little deeper look, and I'll check into that in the next day or two here, and we'll have something posted as soon as somebody fesses up to who made the mistake and if the proper procedure was followed.
Yeah, I want to know what Motzko and Marvin said.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see. It'll be it's interesting to talk about, and we'll see what happens. I mean, that goes across all leagues and all, you know. And did it happen only because it was in North Dakota and the game was on TV? That's UConn and Army. What happens?
Yeah, it's a good question. I said, you know, this is the Ralph where you've got, you know, a video board the size of my freshman dorm. There's, you're not lacking opportunities to take a look at this if you're the officials, if you're the fans, if you're TV. So I'm that's going to be one of my questions is why wasn't it done sooner?
Well, and then maybe you'll get a double-sided answer. Well, it's not a reviewable play during the period. Well, why is it reviewable during intermission then?
Right.
I don't know. What else going on in the WC?
It gives new meaning to the term delayed penalty.
Yeah, no kidding.
He must have been tired from having his arm up that long.
Yeah.
That's why they do Pilates in the offseason.
That's right.
Burpees.
What else?
Well, outside that, speaking of North Dakota, fun series upcoming this weekend when the Fighting Sioux travel to Denver. And by the way, I can still say Fighting Sioux. Nothing's been determined there yet, but obviously a pretty big series for both teams. Denver with still a little bit to prove. I believe their last time out of the gate was that game up in Anchorage where they got beat 7-3, which is still a little bewildering. It was in Anchorage, so few people saw it and can't comment on it. But they've had that taste in their mouth for more than a week now, and I'm thinking are pretty eager to get out on the ice and see what they can do with North Dakota in town.
One thing
Jess,
I'll bring this up for your consideration. Through the 58 teams in Division I college hockey, the team with the most goals scored this year, they total of 42 goals on the season, are your Minnesota Duluth Bulldogs.
Yeah, that stat may be skewed a little bit from the fact that their last game was an 8-1 win. Justin Fontaine, nice little shout out for him, 4 goals in that one.
They
do all count. But you know, it's look at the WCHA overall statistics right now as I pull them up, courtesy of our good friend T. Dizzle. 3 of the top 4 scorers in the league: Fontaine, Jack Connolly, Rob Bordson, Mike Connolly. Are all wearing the cute little dog on the front of their sweater.
There you go.
So, yeah, I mean, that's a departure. You know, Scott Sandlin, even among his better teams, haven't scored at that kind of clip. So all that preseason talk about Brady Jelly or Kenny Ryder and who is going to step up in goal, well, it hasn't mattered as much as it might have when you're putting goals on net and in net with that frequency.
By the way, the next highest total in the nation is 41 for Union. They've done it in one fewer game, actually. 11
nice.
Games played.
Are the Bulldogs still the most penalized team in college hockey as well?
Michigan, I think.
Okay.
I didn't see it after last week's stats. But then the two teams that are next tied for third, just in total goals, Michigan State. A huge jump from a team that couldn't score at all last year. 40 goals. And
Merrimack.
The Merrimack Warriors with 40 goals in 10 games. They're averaging 4 goals a pop. And they haven't been able to score in the last 15 years.
So they gotta keep recruiting French kids, I guess.
So yeah, some of the teams you might not expect. I mean, Minnesota Duluth's a little bit different, but they're popping some goals, so I guess.
Well, if you go back 20 years,
screwed out to those teams who.
If you go back 20 years, Minnesota Duluth was known for goal scoring.
Well, everyone was known for goal scoring.
That's true.
No kidding.
We are in the dead puck era still.
For college hockey, you bring 4 hats because you might see 2 hat tricks each side.
So true.
That's why the economy bottomed out. It all starts with hats.
Yeah. Teams stop scoring.
But I mean, in a roundabout way, you know, you kind of segue into the, you know, is the scoring better or is the goaltending worse?
I think the goaltending is the same. you know, you're going to lose, you lose some studs, but there's always more where that came from.
Yeah.
How are we going to ever replace Ryan Miller and Jimmy Howard? Well, there's Brad Tiesen, you know, and
like, no, I hear what you're saying. I'm just saying overall, you know, even looking at the NHL drafts the last 3-4 years, the goaltending crop has been pretty, pretty marginal. You know, is that starting to catch up a little bit?
Well, I don't think guys get to be great goalies until they're about 25 or 26 years old. So that to me is the bigger story. Physical and mental development, you know, I think takes longer with goaltending. But that's just my theory.
Interesting.
Yeah. Ryan Miller played 3 full years almost in the American Hockey League.
Yep.
Counting the lockout year. You know. So we'll see what happens with that.
Robert Morris, capable of giving Colorado College any trouble this weekend?
No.
Anybody know anything about Bob Moe?
It's one guy. How would...
Yeah, that's true.
How would he...
That's a just... That series kind of sticks out. You know, like, what are these teams doing?
Yeah. Yeah,
everyone's looking for games, especially the College Hockey America teams, but...
Rook, shout out to your cousin Joe Howe for what he's doing in goal for the Tigers, by the way.
It's also my father.
Really?
Your yeah. dad is your cousin?
Yep. Crazy things happening in Lowell.
Apparently so.
I'm not going to say Alabama Huntsville. Oh, I just said it.
Oh.
Oh.
All right.
Save the Chargers.
Save the Chargers.
did that goalie, did he come from juniors?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, he did. He didn't come directly out of high school. He's a suburban Minneapolis kid, but he was a USHL guy last year.
Oh,
I
want
to say Cedar Rapids, maybe?
I think that's what it was. When I talked to Blake Kessel a couple weeks ago, he called me and was, you know, he's like, is Joe Howe there? I'm like, nope. I didn't know who was calling. I just said they had the wrong number. So he called back 15 minutes ago. 15 minutes later, and he's like, yeah, you know, I asked for Joe. He's like, that was my old teammate. He was my goalie back at, I can't think of what team he played for. So I'd imagine there aren't two Joe Howe goaltenders out there right now.
No.
Got to be the same kid.
You should have said, no problem, Phil.
Blake's sister, by the way, I think her name is Amanda, just committed to the University of Minnesota. So, the Kessel family's issues with the University of Wisconsin continue, apparently.
Jeez.
Waterloo Blackhawks, Joe Howe.
Ah, that's right.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
There you go.
That's where Kessel played.
Yep.
So we've narrowed it down.
Wisconsin, Jess, tell me what you think and know about them so far.
I was all ready to write them off, and now all of a sudden they look like a real hockey team. And granted, you know, it was probably dumb of me to write anybody off that early, but just, you know, I went to their season opener against Colorado College and just didn't really see a lot of guys stepping up. I saw them play against Minnesota a little bit, and there just didn't seem to be enough there. But now, hey, they've put together a few in a row and seem to be playing some pretty good hockey. They're going to St. Cloud State this weekend. And then they've got Michigan and Michigan State, so we will probably know a lot more about the viability of the Badgers come December 1st or so. But, you know, you look at what they've done. I mean, 6-3-1 so far, and are scoring goals, which is the one thing I didn't expect them to be able to do. But in the games they've won, you know, 6 goals, 5 goals, 6 goals a couple times, that's a nice little record.
Yeah, just you kind of touched on the showcase there, College Hockey Showcase. And, Bus, I want to talk a little CCHA now.
It might showcase how bad Michigan is.
How bad? Exactly.
That might be the showcase for this year.
We're going to find out. We've started to find out a little bit about Michigan, and we're going to find out about Michigan State as well. They've got the nation's longest unbeaten streak, 7 games, 6-0-1, but now they've got 2 against Notre Dame, and then Wisconsin and Minnesota. You know, those will be home games for the showcase. And Michigan's got a similar, you know, type situation. They're going to have Bowling Green for two and then the showcase. But you saw some of that Michigan State series last week, and we were talking when we were putting together the Inch Power rankings that Michigan just didn't look like they had many weapons. You know, usually you watch a team that maybe a good team that's struggling and you say, I can see this team coming out of it. But I get the sense that this is an average team that's struggling.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought when I watched them on, especially on Friday against Michigan State. You know, the couple goals that they got, obviously they didn't score on Saturday, but the couple of the goals they got Friday were kind of, you know, ricochet deflections that Palmisano, the goalie for Michigan State, really didn't. I don't want to say he didn't have a chance on, but they were just, you know, they kind of clanged around in front of the net and, you know, ended up in the back of the net. I agree with that assessment completely that, you know, that the one thing that jumped out on me, especially on Friday night, and, you know, Michigan State's a good team, but, you know, they're not a terrific shutdown team by any means. The one thing that jumped out at me was just the complete lack of playmakers Michigan had on offensively. You know, I think the guys that they have there now, you know, Caparuso and and the forwards of that ilk, you know, are more suited to finishing, and kind of what they're missing is the playmaker, that, which is interesting because that's something that Michigan has really had in its program going back to, you know, the days of Brendan Morrison, you know, right up through last year with Aaron Palucha. They just don't have that person that can make things happen offensively, and you know, it showed. They've scored four goals in the last two weeks against Michigan State and Miami. Granted, two pretty good teams.
Right.
But, you know, like you said, it's not the fact that they're getting chances and just not converting. They're not getting chances.
Yeah.
Which I think is pretty – has to be pretty disconcerting for, you know, for Red Berenson's team. And, you know, history says that they'll perk up, but I can't remember seeing a Michigan team that has just really not had an offensive presence like this.
Nor can
they. They don't seem dangerous at all.
Yep. Agreed. Well, we'll see.
It's very odd.
And as you mentioned, they played two very good teams. Michigan State and Miami currently atop the CCHA standings. Most teams, I believe, split at Miami earlier this year.
But, you know, you look at the rest of their schedule, it's not like they've really handled.
No, I know. Yeah, they beat Niagara by a goal. They beat,
They lost to BU. They lost to BU, right? Yeah.
Yeah, they beat Lake Superior twice, which
nobody. Yeah. No.
Anyway, we'll see what that brings down the road for Michigan. It'll be good. I still can't get used to this 3-point standing stuff. I'm not crazy.
Well, we kind of talked about this a little bit the other day too. Where I think it was
Ferris's press release.
Yeah, no, Ferris's Twitter following the Miami series on the end of the last game of the series on Saturday. The two teams, Miami and Ferris, tied
both nights
down in Oxford, and Ferris won the shootout both nights. So the tweet came in Saturday night from Ferris saying, you know, Ferris sweeps number one
sweep, yeah.
Miami. I'm like, well, yeah, I guess you could say that if that's how you want to put it, but it's more like two ties. Yeah, it's kind of hokey, but
to me, a sweep is 6 points to none in that league.
Yes, I would agree.
4-2, I don't count that as a sweep.
I would agree.
Do they get a point if for an overtime loss, or just in the shootout you get the point? You shouldn't get the point because NCAA rules it's a loss.
Right. You know, I don't know that for sure, but I think
I'm looking at the standings here. There's no column for that. Overtime
loss. Just shootout loss.
Win, loss, tie, shootout, win. That's it. So, anyway, there you go. Let's talk.
By the way, I should mention for fans of hockey and different venues, a couple neutral site games this weekend in the CCHA.
Yeah.
Okay. Saturday, the Michigan and Bowling Green are going to be down in the new rink in Toledo, home of the ECHL's Toledo Walleye. And
Toledo Walleye?
Yeah.
Because when you think walleyes, you think Ohio, obviously.
Well, hey, great. Lake Erie is a very well-known walleye lake.
I did not know that.
Well, you do know.
That's why we have a podcast.
Exactly.
People where to fish.
It was in a Sporkle quiz. Anyway, and then...
No, I feel shame. I still feel shame.
Why?
Sporkle. I got crushed. Anyway.
Anyways, yeah. And then Sunday, Michigan State and Notre Dame play at Fort Wayne, which of course is a regional site.
Yes.
For the NCAA tournament this year, Midwest Regional. And a fantastic building, by the way.
Good old barn.
Yeah, it is. It is. If you ever get the chance to go to a game in Fort Wayne, be it for NCAA or the Fort Wayne Comets, go. Because it's a great building. They don't build them like that anymore.
I like the old buildings. Fortunately, we have a lot of those in my league.
Yeah.
So. Is Fort Wayne still the Comets?
They are.
Good for them. With a K?
With a K.
Outstanding.
Nice.
Glad they didn't change the name. I hate name changes.
Yeah.
Why can't Quinnipiac still be the Braves?
Well, there's rules about that.
I know. But hey, Merrimack's still the Warriors, and they make it work somehow. So,
well, they changed to a more of a 300 type warrior as opposed to a
Lowell
Dances with Wolves warrior.
Gotcha.
Lowell, Miami, anybody else? Change those two for sure.
Minnesota State
almost changed to the Gray Wolves like 8 years ago.
Wow.
The Gray Wolves. Are
you picketing the president's lawn on that one?
Gray Wolves, really?
Gray Wolves.
Yikes.
I think North Dakota, if they have to change, should just come out in just plain white sweaters with a number on the back and nothing else.
The Penn State of hockey?
Kind
of
like generic beer cans back in the day.
North Dakota.
Beer.
Just be North Dakota. Don't have any.
It'll just say hockey on the front.
Yeah.
Be like Arsenal. Just Arsenal.
Team. Arsenal.
Liverpool. Just go with it.
My favorite response to the whole Native American nickname thing was years ago, Grand Forks Central High School was the Redskins, and they were pressured to change. And, you know, Grand Forks is a bit of a farming area. There was a movement afoot to keep the name Redskins, but just change the mascot to a potato.
Nice. I like it.
It didn't work. They're like the Knights or something now, but oh well.
Saw on Twitter that my Rams started up practice this week, Jess.
I saw that.
Ready Rose to go. Rams hockey.
God bless them.
Go.
Your Rams.
They're loaded. They're loaded for bear.
So what do you do in the case of Aaron Marvin when one of my Warriors plays for your Huskies? See?
You like everybody's.
That's right. It's a big tent.
Oh my. I cheer for everyone equally.
Glad he's the guy at the games holding the pennant that says hockey.
I am.
Competition.
The Homer Simpson pennant that says TV sports.
Exactly.
Sportsmanship.
sportsmanship.
Well, Jess, you mentioned Quinnipiac. I guess I'll talk a little ECAC hockey here. They're really good. They're playing well.
Yes, they are.
And Jess, you've talked about it in the past, and you know, sometimes at the Mariucci or regional sites, you get to talk to some of the players from Ivy League schools or ECAC hockey schools, and you've been impressed with, you know, how their answers are when you're interviewing them, and manners and well-spoken honesty.
Absolutely.
And I had a great, you know, I had a great time speaking with Quinnipiac's Mike Atkinson last week. He was it's good to talk to. He's an older kid. He had a redshirt year, started his career at Vermont, and is now in his fourth year with Quinnipiac. And he's kind of a veteran guy on that team that lost some big-time talent last year. And they're really really off to a fantastic start. And they've got, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11, sometimes even 12 freshmen in the lineup and 12 on the roster for sure. So when that opportunity comes around, you know, when people look at it in the offseason, they're like, oh, wow, we don't know what to expect, so you're going to get a lower preseason ranking because what you vote on is what you know. You know, I know that this team has this All-American back. I know that this team has this All-League guy back. You know, Quinnipiac, we didn't really know, you know, who's going to stop the puck, who's going to score goals other than maybe Brandon Wong and Scott Zierowinski. But this is a Quinnipiac team that has bought into doing a little bit more defensive work, doing little things, you know, making back checks, making shot blocks, you know, getting little plays off the board. So they're not counting on, you know, high-profile guys like David Marshall and Brian Leach to get all their scoring. And it's been a good start for them. Pardon me. You know, they've won four in a row in the league, the only team with a perfect ECAC hockey record. All four of those are home. They'll get their first road test this weekend at two other very good teams, Colgate and Cornell. But that's a team that's really got it going, so it's nice to see. And it's not too early to pick out the spoilers. I mean, I think Quinnipiac and RPI and Colgate are kind of the three teams that have emerged so far as challenging that Ivy dominant top of the standings that we've seen for at least the last 2 years with Cornell and Princeton, Yale. You know, those three teams are very, very good, but I think that those three you mentioned, and maybe even St. Lawrence and Union could be spoiler-type teams. So,
I was impressed with Quinnipiac. I actually watched quite a bit of that game on Friday.
Against Harvard, yeah.
Against Harvard, and, you know, they had they played with a lot of energy. That's the one thing that really,
stood out at home. That's a tough place to play.
That's the one thing that really stood out to me. And I think that, you know, in the past, you talk about Quinnipiac as kind of a team that, you know, they seem to sort of play in spurts where they're really good and then they just kind of not so good. Yeah. But, you know, the effort, you know, that you mentioned, you know, they worked real hard and they had a lot of jump that night. And I don't know if maybe it was because it was on TV, but, you know, it sounds like, That's not necessarily the case. And, you know, that the goal that Zierowinski scored, I think he scored the second goal, if I remember correctly. You know, it was just a good hustle goal. You know, Harvard was kind of being a little lazy and a little slow behind their net in getting a puck out. And
that Quinnipiac came about 2 minutes after Harvard tied it. Right,
yeah, it was. It was. You know, the Quinnipiac guy goes in there and it just causes the turnover and just kind of shovels it out in the front and boom, guy scored.
Yeah.
Also, that rink is very yellow. They sure cornered the market on yellow chairs in that rink.
Yeah. Was the Fleet Center having a sale or what?
I think they bought some surplus. It is yellow.
Some leftovers.
And all the students wear yellow shirts too.
Yeah. Oh, neat.
They golded out. Yeah.
Looking at their game summaries, their one loss, an 8-5 loss at Robert Morris on Halloween night. Bobcats had
66 shots.
63 shots that night. Scored 5 goals, and you think, boy, you're in pretty good shape. And yeah, somehow no.
Yeah, wasn't the best goaltending night for the
63?
Dan Clark, the Bobcats' starting goalie, allows 5 goals on 16 shots.
And doesn't get the loss.
They pull him after 2 periods, and then poor Eric Hartzell comes in and takes the loss. Because he happens to give up the GW in the third.
That's tough luck losing.
I hope Clark, you know, bought him a soda after the game or something, just to say, hey, sorry, dude.
Well, we talked about Lowell scoring 3 a night. Quinnipiac scored 4 every night, except for a 3-2 win over Bentley and a 3-1 win at Ohio State. Then they've had 4, 5, 5, 5, 4, 4 all those other nights. So they're scoring some goals.
Joe, let me ask you on the flip side, since we're talking UCAC, is Clarkson just not quite there?
They can't score at all.
Okay.
Yeah.
They can't. I haven't seen them. I'm just looking at their numbers. You know, they played at Minnesota Duluth earlier this season and didn't. I think they scored 2 goals on the weekend, but.
Yeah, well, they've played, you know, at Minnesota Duluth for 2, you know, a team that we've ranked. At Michigan State for 2, a team that we've ranked. You know, at Quinnipiac and Princeton, both in the Inch Power rankings. So, I mean, they're 3-0 at home.
that's not true.
They were 3-0 at home, but they
this had past weekend.
Yeah, in Union this past weekend. But
Rensselaer and Union.
Yeah, but yeah, they're having trouble scoring, and they've had some flu situation and some injury situations. I mean, it's been campus wide. I mean, even at the non hockey level, like their volleyball team canceled a weekend tournament because they had kids that were so sick, and swimming and diving team, same thing. So they've been H1N1'd early on, but
that's no fun.
They haven't scored more than 2 in their last 6 games. 3 deuces and 3 aces. So they're going to Dartmouth and Harvard, and from what we've seen from those teams so far, you can score against them. So
so maybe this is it.
A matchup of weaknesses instead of a matchup of strengths.
Well, according to your email, I'm the Ivy League beat writer now, so I got to pay more attention to that, right?
You are the Ivy League. You got
St. Cloud got into the Ivy finally.
Yeah, that's right. Well, long overdue.
My husky.
The Harvard of Stearns County. Oh, no, wait, St. John's in Stearns County? Forget it.
No, I thought it was Stearns Technical College. That was the Harvard.
Yeah.
Well, for those who don't know, Jess wrote a good article about Ivy League hockey in USA Hockey Magazine.
And I got to answer to the guy that emailed me. I never emailed him back. I'm sorry, but he asked why his alma mater, Penn, does not have hockey. The simple question is, I don't know, but according to Bill Cleary, at one point they did. I mean, in the early days of
Paul
Ivy
Stewart
League hockey.
Played there.
Yeah, Penn was part of the mix. He said Columbia has never fielded a hockey team on any level as far as he knows. But Penn was part of the mix. So let's hope springs eternal. Let's get the Quakers back out on the ice.
They still have a rink there.
Yeah, they do have a rink.
And it's actually a pretty cool old rink.
Well, like all the others, more or less.
But. Yeah, if you Google search, like, Penn Quaker hockey.
Can they play at the Palestra or whatever? Slap an ice sheet down there?
They have something like that.
The Palestra is where the St. Joe's Hawks mascot lives when he's not working games. So he's there flapping away, defending the basketball rink from any hockey intruders.
He's apparently doing a good job because there have been none, as far as we know. He's got a perfect record.
We got that going on.
I thought Penn gave up hockey because Teller wasn't down with it.
Oh.
Good.
Teller didn't say anything about it.
Yeah, he was noncommittal.
He did not verbal to Penn.
Oh, we're such a bunch of junior high schoolers.
Speaking of verbals and the city of Philadelphia, QM has verbaled to the Frozen Four this year. I got that note yesterday. Bemidji State, Jess. You watched them? Legit?
I did.
I watched them. I thought they were pretty good. Matt Reed did.
Matt Reed's really good. Jordan George is having a very nice freshman year.
Their second line center, Shea Walters, a kid out of Hibbing, got his first goal this weekend, but looked to me like a guy who can move the puck, you know, not real big. I don't think you're going to get a lot of, you know, supersized guys because, frankly, they're probably going to be recruited more aggressively by other schools. But, no, I like that team a lot. Dan Bakla obviously got his first loss of the season, team's first loss of the season, in the Saturday night game. And then they bring back Matthew Dugas, a freshman out of L'Assomption, Quebec. And he, you know, beats the Gophers in their home rink. First time Bemidji State has ever beaten Minnesota, and I trust it won't be the last time with Bemidji joining the WCHA next year. I think they're going to be a competitive team right away based on what I saw this weekend.
Yeah. You wanted to give a stick salute to Dan Bakla?
I did? Oh, yeah, I did! I forgot about that. Thanks for the reminder. Dan Bakla. Stick salute. I don't know if anybody saw it on TV, but on the back of his helmet, in green, he's got Bob and Doug McKenzie of the Great White North.
No kidding.
God bless him.
I did not see that.
Yeah.
That is great.
Yeah.
I did!
That is fantastic. I'm going to have to go look for a picture of that now.
Yeah. In fact, our fine photographer, Jim Roswald, was at the game, and I asked him to get a shot, and he said he thinks he got a good one. So,
oh, good.
Look for that on Inch in the future. We'll,
Rosie. Rosie LaRose got a shot. Rosie should have invited him down to Campus Pizza for an Elsinore after the game.
He was going to, but they found a mouse in the bottle.
There was a cop friend there, and he puked.
All right. Let's get to deterioration after I got a stick salute. We saw it in Inch's first shift. RIT's won 6 in a row. They started with 5 straight losses to start the season, but won 6 in a row all within the league, and they are tied for first in Atlantic Hockey with Air Force, 5-1-2. Kind of the same old there. Canisius third, they're good. I'm not surprised by that. So, there you go.
Air Force rebounding from a tough start to claw back to 500 now. So,
yeah. That league just didn't do anything outside in non-conference play.
Yeah.
Everyone got beat up. So.
Yeah, they were at one point. They were what 127-1.
27-0. Yeah, that win is Canisius over Ferris, I think.
Speaking of Air Force, if anybody watched Saturday night's Gopher Bemidji State game, Doug Woog was waxing, as he often does, about his early days as a coach.
Ew. And, he was waxing?
Well, we didn't want to stop.
Waxing nostalgic.
That's right. He was talking about coaching the St. Paul Vulcans back in the junior USHL days from the mid-70s. He said, the only two Italians I ever coached, Frank Ceratori and Mark Mazzolini. And hey, not a bad record for those two, the way they wound up.
Yeah. Coaches become, you get coaches?
The cradle of coaches, Doug Woog.
There you go.
Something.
The man who launched 1,000 coaches. Any last call items, guys? Deterioration? Anybody?
I got to add a little side note about Doug Woog. I work with the Youth Hockey Association in the town where I live here. Doug's granddaughter is playing youth hockey, and Doug has kind of volunteered to be one of the assistant coaches on his granddaughter's team. We had a hockey board meeting, and we go through, we have to approve everyone who signed up to coach. And somebody brought up the very legitimate question, do we know if Doug Woog has the proper USA Hockey coaching certification to be out there on the ice?
That's true.
Can't he just show, like, one of his many WCHA championship rings? Wouldn't that qualify?
Yeah, you have to do that stuff.
Somebody had to tell him he had to wear a helmet during practice.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, yeah. Hey, rules are rules.
If I'm on that team, I'm wearing a hat to every practice.
Oh, I get it.
Find a little cabbage in there.
A little extra? Yeah.
Yeah, a little stocking stuffer.
A little something for the effort.
Yeah.
The Wooger didn't wear a helmet when he played.
Yeah. No, can't he be grandfathered in? No pun intended.
Yeah.
Does Campus Pizza have a Galactic Border Patrol, by the way?
No, but I think they're going to add it pretty soon.
Good.
I know the owner.
Rosie LaRose. Sorry about your nervous breakdown. I had one too when he was born.
Wow.
What's going on out east there?
That's about it.
Silent Bob.
Yep. Just, you know, a bunch of people love the Patriots right now.
He's...
Devils lost a road game. They stink.
He's out there trying to figure out how he can ditch work so he can get in line for Twilight.
That's exactly it.
I knew it.
Yeah, I'm putting my master plan together right now.
Are you on Team Vampire or Team Frankenstein? I don't know, man.
I know the movie's name is Twilight.
That's all I know.
Yeah. Apparently you know something about a Team Vampire, though, so I think you're holding out on us.
I just know what I've read in the USA Today.
It's a fine, fine publication.
Did your wife let you have a Kristen Stewart poster on your wall, Bus?
No, I'm not down with her. She's dead behind the eyes.
All right.
I just rented Adventureland. That's supposed to be good. She's in that.
What about, Rook, you mentioned the Patriots, and you know how much I love the NFL. But I had that game on Sunday night when the Patriots went for the win.
Yep.
They played to win, man. I like
that. They did. You got to admire that.
I admire playing to win.
Peyton Manning's going to score from his own one or your 28. It really doesn't matter where you give him the ball. You gotta go for the win.
Yes. I agree.
Yep. It's made for an interesting week, though. Tomorrow should just be a blast down there.
Oh, but, yeah. Here's the thing. Here's the question. It was 3rd and 2.
4th and 2.
Yep.
No, but first, before it was 4th and 2, it was 3rd and 2.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Why don't you run it? If you know you're gonna go for it on...
Because he didn't know.
He didn't think he didn't know at that point.
Nope, he did not make his
on third down.
Right, he didn't make the decision to go for it on fourth down.
It was a four down situation until after third down.
Yeah, that's the one thing that he did to screw it up. He didn't have the proper communication going. It was basically on his wavelength and didn't have it going to guys in the huddle. He didn't have it going to the coaches and the players on the sidelines. And then they had to call the timeout. There was way too much wasted effort beforehand. That got them into trouble. And then on the field, Brady missed Welker wide open across the middle. Went to Falk instead. I thought it was a great call, but there were missed opportunities throughout that would have set it up set them up to be in a better situation.
I agree.
It is a great call. I don't disagree with it.
Yeah. I want to see Belichick become the first NFL coach to accept this no punting mantra. Have you read about this?
Yeah, some high school team.
Yeah, a high school in Arkansas. This coach, they've punted twice in like the last 8 years.
So he grew up in the Madden generation.
That's right. Really interesting story about it, though, because he said, you know, okay, you've got 4th and 8 on your own 8-yard line. If you go for it and don't make it, there's like a 92% chance the opponent's going to score. But if you punt it, there's like a 78% chance the opponent's going to score. So you're really not gaining that much by punting.
But you are.
I don't know.
That sounds like a guy shouldn't have a head coaching
shouldn't
job.
Shouldn't be in charge of children's lives.
Yep.
Go glad he's taking a moral stand. I love it.
Right. He's probably telling kids on their ride home, you have a 99% chance to arrive at your house safely if you wear your seatbelt, but you have like an 87% chance if you don't wear your seatbelt. So it's not that big of a deal.
76 if you just stick your head out of the window.
Right.
Still above 50% if you ride on the hood.
Right. It goes down to 62% if you drink a 12-pack before you get in the car.
He went down to...
It's 33 if you ride with Danny Heatley.
Easy.
Oh, man. I can't say too soon because, you know,
it's not.
Who does Notre Dame football play this weekend, boss?
Connecticut.
I got a scouting report on them.
Zach Frazier and Connecticut. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Speaking of two,
I don't think you can say that on a podcast.
No, I'm pretty sure. Pretty sure that.
All right.
I don't know.
Well, I think a lot of Notre Dame fans might want Danny Heatley to drive Charlie Weiss to that game on Saturday.
Oh.
Is it time, Russ?
Yeah, it's time. It's time.
It's time.
I think.
I was talking to another Notre Dame fan, and he agreed. You know, like, guys like you who go to games and watch every Saturday, you know, like, not just I cheer for them because I grew up Catholic in Washington, D.C., and, you know, I'm Irish, so I cheer for Notre Dame. You know, these guys who pay attention, you know, follow the whole season, 365 days. He said it's time. He said, and he actually is a coach in a different sport, but he said he could tell when they came out of the tunnel against Navy, they weren't ready. And that was the final step for him.
So. Yeah, I think so. I think Charlie Weiss has gotten the program on solid footing after that whole, you know, the whole Davey Willingham debacle, and you know how those hirings were kind of screwy and the recruiting classes dropped off, and you know they got a lot of talent in there, but he's not the guy to take the talent and, you know, mold it into a consistent winner.
There you go.
You know, he's a coordinator, and there was a reason that he was a coordinator.
Yeah. Now what if we put him on a coaching staff with Dick Juron and Jerry Glanville and John L. Smith? That would be an exciting team to watch.
And Greg Robinson.
Greg Robinson, yes. Greg Robinson. All those guys are going to be having...
Do you think Michigan hockey is happy that Michigan football is taking all the headlines right now?
Yeah, I guess.
A weapon of mass distraction.
Yeah. What if Michigan beats Ohio State in football on Saturday? I know it's impossible to consider, but I mean, does that talk about putting lipstick on the pig, you know? Against some bowl eligible-ish, 6-6. They beat their biggest rival. They're in their biggest game of the year. But, I mean, they lost 7 in a row or whatever.
So then they go to Motor City Bowl and lose to Central.
Exactly.
Since we're on the topic of Big Ten and potential coaching changes, as Minnesota was barely beating South Dakota State last weekend, somebody cut to a student in the Minnesota student section with a sign that said, "Got Dungy."
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
There's no way Tony Dungy takes that job.
Proud University of Minnesota alum who stumped to get the stadium built? He wouldn't come back here?
Nope.com.
Sadly, I agree with you. I mean, it would finally create some excitement about Gopher football, but
I saw some Bills fan, yeah, based here in upstate New York, a lot of rejoicing on Facebook messages and such about Dick Juron being fired today. Guy writes, "Okay, now all we need to do is get Gruden, Holmgren, Dungy, or some other guy." and we'll be ready to go.
Some other guy.
Like, oh, good. Now all I have to do is start dating models if I want to date models. It's that easy. I just have to start doing it.
How to be a millionaire. Step one, get $1 million.
Exactly. I forget who the other guy was. I can't remember.
Power.
Yeah, that might have been it. That might have been it.
Joe Gibbs.
Lombardi. If only I could resurrect Vince Lombardi.
He was good. He won, right, in Green Bay?
He won.
Parcells. Yeah. Well, is he coaching anymore?
Yeah, he could make his final stop in the AFC's tour.
That's right.
He should. What the heck? Hit for the cycle. He could probably crush some wings, too.
Yeah, no kidding. Last call, fellas? Anybody?
I'll tell you what you don't want to do. You don't want to have TBS on and then all of a sudden realize you're watching the George Lopez show because you got caught being too involved in a podcast. It's a good way to ruin your night.
Yeah, that's I haven't seen it, but I'm sure it's a mess.
Jess, anything?
No, I got nothing else.
Duluth football in the playoffs again?
Yeah, they are in the playoffs against Saginaw Valley State, I want to say.
Oh, Sag Nasty.
Well, so your alma mater's back in the playoffs? Football.
Yeah, St. Thomas, they play somebody from Iowa, I think.
Yeah.
Rook, play UMass? Central or Co.
UMass in the playoffs, Rook?
Nope.
Nope.
How about UNH?
Probably not.
Really?
I'm going to go with no.
They beat Ball State earlier this year.
So did everyone.
Yeah, everyone except for Eastern Michigan.
Shout out to the WCHA, by the way. For years I've been complaining that they have the Minnesota teams playing at home on the opening weekend of deer season, which automatically eliminates 40% of your male fan base. Yeah. This year, all of the Minnesota-based teams were on the road that weekend. So, good work, guys.
Deer season.
Something they do out west, Rook. You wouldn't understand.
Men go out in the woods with weapons and kill animals and eat them. It's a whole new thing.
Why don't you just go to the grocery store?
They don't sell venison at the grocery store.
Oh, yes, they do. Oh. At Wegmans, they sell everything.
Do they really?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Sure, they do.
I would think the hoops you would have to jump through to sell venison would just be a nightmare.
I've never purchased it, but...
My grocery store doesn't have hoops. I typically walk right up to the big freezer and select a tasty cut.
An item of your choice.
There you go.
Rook, you don't have to understand the hunting thing.
I think hunting is actually a pretty cool concept. I just would have no desire to go collect the dead carcass that I just made dead and then drag it all the way home in my 98 Toyota Camry.
That's not the worst. That's not anywhere near the worst part.
What's the worst part?
The worst part is when you have to cut the carcass open and do a whole bunch of stuff.
Well, that's what you have kids for, right, Jess?
Hey, my kid got his own deer this year, so.
Sounds like he should have gotten his own knife as well.
Oh, he had his own knife. I just kind of had to show him what to do. But
get a shovel.
Shout out to my 12-year-old. One shot. Successful deer season.
Let me tell you about deer season. And I used to hunt, and I haven't hunted in 23 years or whatever. You go out into the woods to this little shack that has no electricity, no running water, no indoor plumbing. Then you get up on a freezing cold morning and go sit out in the woods at the crack of dawn and just think about how miserable you are.
You wait.
Then I fall asleep, usually.
That's a dirty little secret, but there is a lot of napping involved.
Is that deer season or is that a Notre Dame tailgate?
Hey, I don't tailgate. I'm in and out. I'm humble. I'm all business. I don't mix business and pleasure.
Yeah. Neither does the football team.
Yeah, that's the truth.
All right.
They're still 6-4.
Yeah, I know.
They were 6-6 last year.
Yeah.
And they beat Boston College, thank God. And
no.
And nobody brought Thunder Sticks.
Yeah, exactly. It's a podcast topic conversation earlier.
I give that a thumbs up as the best podcast rant of the season so far.
You should have been in the car when that rant went off after the.
Plus had a good 2.5-hour drive to get that.
No, Gladdy and Nate had the. They had a different rant going.
Yeah, we did.
Nate was ranting at his liver. Gladdy was ranting at defensive backs that play 5 steps behind the guy in the red zone.
Yeah.
Oh, that was same weekend.
Yes.
The only fail that we had on that night was that Dowd didn't come up. We could have had a little inch Congress from 3 different games all gather at the Mayfair.
Yeah, who did Michigan play that day? Was that
somebody that they lost to?
That wasn't. Was that Purdue?
No. No, the Purdue was recent.
Illinois?
Nope.
No, that was
Penn State.
Oh yeah, that was
Yeah. So Dowd was in Ann Arbor. Bus went to South Bend, and Nate and I were in East Lansing. It was a good time. Good time. All right, that'll do it for this edition of the Inch Podcast. For Jeff Howe, Jess Myers, Mike Idlebus, my name is Joe Gladyszewski. We'd like to thank the 2010 NCAA Frozen Four presenting sponsor of the Inch Podcast, and we'll talk to you again soon.